Joe, how you doing?
Another perfect day, Tim. I'm happy to be here, happy to be back in a solid technological platform. Sorry that our normal showtime was wrecked by the incompetence of Silicon Valley to provide me with a server, but what can I tell you? It failed completely. Anyway, we will be blasting off tonight into better communications. And we'll be talking about the moon hoax, or the moon landing, excuse me, that occurred so long ago. Tim, what was it? How did it come into our consciousness as something that was supposed to be real?
Well, the Apollo program, or Project Apollo, this is according to Wikipedia, was a third U.S. human spaceflight program carried out by the National Aeronautics Space Administration, otherwise known as NASA, which accomplished the landing of the first humans on the moon from 1969 to 1972, first conceived during Eisenhower's administration as a three-man spacecraft to follow one man, Project Mercury, which put the first American in space. Apollo was later dedicated to President John F. Kennedy, dedicated to President John F. Kennedy's national goal of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth by the end of the 1960s, which he proposed in an address to Congress on May 25th, 1969. Of course, according to the standard narrative, the official narrative, that was achieved on July 20th, 1969. Kennedy's goal was accomplished by the Apollo 11 mission, when astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed their lunar module on the moon and walked on the lunar surface with Michael Collins remaining in the lunar orbit in the command module. And all three landed safely back on Earth on July 24th. Five subsequent Apollo missions also landed astronauts on the moon, the last in December 1972. In these six space flights, 12 men walked on the moon. So that's the official narrative of events. So, Joe, you're old enough to remember this. I mean, I was alive, but I certainly didn't remember it. I do remember the space age, sort of the pop culture. The everyone was crazy about going into space. All the cartoons always had someone eventually had in space. Like Josie and the Pussycats in space. Instead of a cartoon, there was mass marketed. You had Tang and Space Sticks and everything from mattresses to stereos were utilized space age technology to improve their products and these things. So it became part of the popular culture, but you lived it. So how did you perceive it when it occurred, and how do you perceive it now?
Well, a little known fact is that actually I walked on the moon. I stowed away on the first flight. And
there was a TV movie called Stowaway to the Moon.
Oh God, this thing is so amazing to me that the public buys it. But on the other hand, if you look at the people trying to make the case that it was a hoax, and they bring up the flag fluttered, there's no debris coming up as the rocket engine supposedly comes down, and they have all these little kind of curiosities, which there's always an explanation for, right? For example, the fluttering flag. This is one of the things that the people who are trying to make the affirmative case that it was a hoax will come up with. And, they talk that, you can see in one of the videos that the American flag that has been planted appears to wave. And since there's obviously no wind on the moon, this shows that it was in a, some kind of a studio that wind came through and the flag fluttered. But the people who then will make, you know, the debunking the hoax argument will say, no, you know, there was a wire in the flag, and so when they pulled it taut to basically hold the flag erect so that people could see it, then this, as the wire was adjusted and Old Glory appeared to wave. Now, you know, this argument is not completely coherent because the fluttering appears to occur after the astronaut walks past, but nevertheless, it's a good example of, you know, the to and fro between the people who are trying to make the affirmative case that the moon landing was a hoax and the people who are trying to basically debunk the people who are making that argument. And yeah, so
there's also a similar thing with the shadows, with the intersecting shadows.
Yeah,
suggesting two sources of light. Yeah,
yeah. Every single point that the people who are trying to make the case that it was a hoax come up with, there can always be, you know, a rebuttal to. And, you know, you have popular mechanics, the oligarch, you know, kind of a handbook for the masses of propaganda. It just comes up with, you know, a refutation for every single thing. There's just, no matter what it is, there's a refutation. I actually, Tim, I just look at it from a completely different way, which is that it was obviously fake because it can't be proved to have been real. And I think that, I mean, in the post 9/11 world, the citizen should be, pretty skeptical, right?
That's an important analytical approach, because quite often the people who are skeptical are forced to provide a positive case that it was fake, when obviously whenever the positive assertion should require positive evidence, not the negative, assertion or the doubt, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And then after you've demonstrated malevolence and the use of propaganda for mind control on the part of the government, I mean, this group of people is supposed to be taken seriously when they say that they put a man on the moon.
Well, Joe, when has a president, when has a general, when has an alphabet soup agency ever lied to the American people? Come on, what are you saying? They're saying you're liars? Walter Cronkite declared it was lie from the moon. Walter Cronkite himself.
Yeah, yeah. So there it is. I mean, but this is the thing, is that I mean, it's obviously an example of using a kind of government scientism. And okay, so I'm using the expression to mean that they're bamboozling the people to concede godlike powers to them because they have some capacity to produce science, right? You know, so this is what you really have with the moon landing, is it's
it's the monolith.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the monolith that in 2001. You see, yeah. My point is that, look, everything that they gave us could be fake, right? The moon landing is no better than the stuff that Kubrick comes up with for 2001. Now, people have often, you know, they said, hey, Kubrick was in on the deal.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
It's a great story, though. It's a great theory. It's very interesting.
Great story, great theory. But it's irrelevant, because the fact is he did come up with special effects of moon and space stuff, which was just as good, if not better, than anything that NASA gave us on television.
That's right, because right, the 2001 Space Odyssey scenes from the moon are more realistic than what we saw with the movie.
Yeah. They're just as good, if not better. I actually watched the film some time ago. I was impressed with how good the special effects were. They're very realistic. So, look, therefore, since it is completely clear that it could have been faked, right, just technically possible, and now you'd need a lot of people in on the conspiracy, like 9/11, for example, right? You'd need a whole secret society brotherhood working in conjunction with one another to pull it off. Is that – okay, so – but we know now that such a – an organization exists.
Well, also one thing, just one about 2001 Space Odyssey, is that both the movie and the Apollo space program had employed Fred Ordway as a top scientific advisor, and the screenwriter for 2001 Space Odyssey was Arthur C. Clarke, of course, who also hung out with, officials from NASA. So that's an interesting intersection there. Doesn't prove anything. It's just very interesting that at the same time,
it proves that it's possible.
Yeah, this collusion is possible.
You have associations and connections and people, knew one another. So it was definitely possible. With 911, you can see there is a large malevolent organization that knows how to keep its mouth shut. So it'd been easy to get the bald-headed guys in this space, command center who were also concerned about everything. You know, they had that guy with the vest running around.
Oh, yeah. So,
But, I mean, these guys could all have easily have been basically just a team full of secret society members who were helping with, the presentation of the scientism to bamboozle the public. And so in my opinion, the onus is on the government. Now, the way you can prove this, that you can do it, is just go there again. Do it again, and this time, believe me, the public will know how to vet it. You see, the last time we didn't have a clue as to how to actually trace the spaceship as it went in, once it started to go to the moon. We didn't know how to really analyze the video feed and the audio stuff. If they would give live pictures now, we would be able to, particularly as they're traveling to the moon, you would have 1,000 guys analyzing every single, and now, they would be able to really come up with some concrete either evidence for or against.
Yeah, well, they've apparently have allowed the telemetry tapes to decompose.
Yeah, that was a tragedy.
Yeah, and they've lost all the high-definition, high-quality footage.
That's all gone. That's just a shame. But popular mechanics will come up with an explanation for it, no doubt about it.
Well, I mean, you would think every single artifact of this, historical greatest technological achievement of mankind, every single artifact would be preserved in the National Archives and Museum under lock and key, climate control, people could see this stuff, the blueprints. How does this stuff work? I mean, how did the climate control work in the LEM? How did they do this? How did the spacesuits work? How did this spacesuits protect them in a 500 degree variance in temperature? But they've never manifested these blueprints or patents, and there's all types of there's this lack of specificity with the technology. It's like you're looking at Hollywood props. You're watching a sci-fi movie, and they're in a spaceship, and there's gravity on board the ship, and you just assume, well, there's a gravity machine, and that's good enough for the show, right? That we just buy it. Well, this is similar to the space program, isn't it? I mean,
they lost everything. They can't make the affirmative case. The only thing they have going for them now is intimidation. They just, browbeat anybody who brings up the fact that, and typically what happens is they'll find someone who has a claim that is able to be debunked, and then they'll publicize this individual and then tear it apart.
Yeah, yeah. And then, there's always this wonderful, magical, the rover, this doom buggy that emerged from a briefcase. Which has never been publicly demonstrated. Now, if someone shows me a videotape of this, from start to finish, I might show it, but I've never have been able to find it. And if I'm mistaken, I'll stand corrected.
I mean, the dune buggy is just one of my pet rocks. I think about the dune buggy every day, Tim. I really, because I don't think you've ever seen a video of the thing unfolding. Because someone pointed out, they go, well, the rover is way too big to be, how could it have been carried into space? And so NASA has a tape of the side of the LEM, right, the landing, popping out, and inside it is a box which unfolds into the Land Rover. Right.
Yeah.
It's exactly like a transformer. It just here comes the wheels pop out of here. The seats pop out of here. Here comes the engine. The back wheels pop out. The thing rolls onto the cylinder, and there you go. You can take off now.
Okay. So they mass market Tang, but they won't mass market that. Okay.
Yep. Well, but here's my point about is that the whole thing is preposterous because look. When you're in outer space on a new planet like the moon, right, you would probably be a little bit careful about walking around because who knows what kind of holes or crevices or whatever is out there, right?
Yeah.
There is no way you'd be driving like a moon buggy over the horizon without having really careful analysis done of the, can the moon buggy basically travel around without going into either quicksand or off in some giant ditch, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there is this, the whole thing is just, it was done as a, you know, as a distraction, as a, because remember, you know, like this is the, I mean, Americans are all in cars at this point. Mm-hmm. And so when you get the car into, you know, on the moon, then suddenly it becomes just, I don't know, more amazing. It's just done basically to ramp up the scientism so that the public would be bamboozled into thinking that the government was like the Wizard of Oz, which is this all-powerful seeing thing.
What was interesting in popular culture at the time, dune buggies were all the rage. Remember all the bad movies, yeah, with dune buggy gangs?
Sure.
I mean, Charles Manson apparently used dune buggies, right? And so it was kind of like it's sort of like on the public's mind at the time. So it's funny that NASA would pick this up in subsequent mission to say, hey, we got to do something that's trendy. It's like putting the bell bottoms on the astronauts or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably what a great, exactly. I mean, they should have made them all like with Beatle cuts, you know? I mean, it was just done to connect into the subconscious of the public. As a distraction, some way to get past the rational parts of their mind into more kind of, you know, familiar territory. So they would be looking at the moon and just, you know, gee, isn't this great? There's cars on the moon and they're driving around. And it's just the power of our government is just omnipotent. They're like God, you know. It's just so this is it is simply ridiculous. And the analytic approach that you know, that the public has been forced and cowed into is that it's up to us to disprove all of this, you know, this like, you know, all of the claims and the videos and stuff. But this is not correct. It's the individuals who are making the extraordinary claim that have the onus upon them.
Yeah.
And as far as like going back, now, bear in mind that, you know, the big hard, like, cost part of this, being presuming that they have the technology for the LEM, it's all been created, and they've got the moon rover ready to go, you know, it's all this technology has been created. All they have to do is just send the thing up to the space orbiter, because we actually did have a... you know, a space station that could orbit the Earth, right?
Yeah.
So all they have to do if they want to go back is just get something up there. And remember, they could actually take the space shuttle and carry big stuff up there. They could make two or three trips and get a nice, you know, LEM set up. You know, kick it with, you know, some thrust, get it going pretty good. And then you'd have exactly the same thing as that the astronauts had, because you could circumvent. In other words, because you have the space station, you could take stuff up in pieces. And you could circumvent the whole load aspect of having the gigantic Titan missile, you know, and the, mm-hmm. you could basically just send up what would be, you know, certainly the equivalent of the LEM up to this, assemble it in the space station, and off they would go. I mean, Tim, if they could do it, they could do it in like a month.
Well, but NASA itself says they can't. I mean, as far as another mission is, because they can't figure a way to protect the astronauts, how did they do it in 1969?
Tim, how did they do it? I mean, how did they do it? I mean,
you were just a better country back then. That's what it is.
We had better engineers.
Yeah. So, so you're telling me that, like, you know, Alan Shepard didn't play golf on the moon?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, these things are for, you know, it's like you were saying that this technology would have been the most sacred technical achievements in existence, right? All of these are things that they've lost would have been sacred to NASA. They would have been the equivalent of, in terms of the Holocaust, the shrunken heads, mm-hmm. and a human skin lampshade, right? I mean, these would have been the most precious artifacts, really, in history, in our culture. Because if you look at the power of the moon landing to create this scientism belief in the public and for the government, or the power of the Holocaust in terms of, you know, social dynamics, you have to keep these original artifacts, right? And bear in mind, you know, that in the case of the Holocaust, like the shrunken heads were the first thing that the press was shown when they come into Buchenwald. Mm-hmm. So there's no way these things would ever have been lost. I mean, it just defies any kind of common sense. The fact that they were lost basically forces the people trying to make the case that the Holocaust is real. They're the ones who have the, you know, the analytic hill to climb. And in the case of NASA, the idea of saying, well, we lost all this stuff and we forgot how to, like, make a spacesuit that can work in outer space and keep the radiation out. Tim, I'm sorry. It's just not plausible. See, they wouldn't have, none of the stuff would have ever been lost. And so what can you say? You're going to have people making the case about fluttering flags and, you know, they have pictures where, you know, the light telemetry is seems to be incorrect. You know, there's like two shadows or could be two sources of light. There's tons of those things. They all fit in perfectly to the pattern of it being fake, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they you can come up with an alternative explanation for every single one. I mean, there's no question. I mean, you know, like, where are the stars, for example?
Yeah. Like,
oh, well, you know, okay. But if you look at, if you just look at the whole process as being fake, and then look at these sequence of facts, it all fits together perfectly with the idea that this was just a video fantasy that was shown to the public, and so. As far as being able to prove any one of them, well, I don't think the public has to. We shouldn't. What we should do is we should say, look, the whole thing looks pretty artificial. Why don't we just send some brave astronauts to the space station, send them up a little, the equivalent of the whatever it was that they shot in, you know, suppose it goes around, you know, the moon. Build it, take a month or so, and because we have so much better technology now, right, you know that the astronauts would be perfectly safe. I mean, this would be like a bus ride, you know, in like 15 blocks in New York City or something. This is nothing, you know, with all of the computer advances we've made and the advances in metallurgy and stuff. We should be able to like, get this thing going and charge tickets, right, like Musk is claiming he wants to do for Mars and things like
mm-hmm.
that. So let's just do it. And then the public can, like, we can scrutinize it very carefully this time and be sure, you know, that that this thing is actually real. So that's my take, is just that once you've kind of established malevolence and propaganda coming from this group, then you have to always assume that the thing that they're showing, it has that as the background to it. And just be more skeptical.
Yeah, I mean, just look, take this into consideration. The Apollo program reportedly put 12 men on the moon in six missions without a single loss of life. There was the Apollo 13 episode that everyone saw, Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Forrest Gump. So that's why Apollo 13 happened. Apollo 13 occurring on April 13th, by the way. So they love the numbers games. Yeah,
isn't it something?
Of course, that occurred at a time when there was a declining interest in the space program, and so all of a sudden they have this drama in space that it gets everyone's attention back on the program again. But not a single loss of life. But the space shuttle program, which, you know, much higher, much more advanced technology, has killed 14 people traveling only hundreds of miles into space, and we're led to believe, we're told to believe rather, that they could send people hundreds of thousands of miles into space. I think it's roughly a quarter of a million miles to the moon, 500,000 miles back, without a single loss of life, with technology, much more primitive technology. What are the chances of that occurring?
Well, you, Tim, know? I mean, it's not just the fact that you get the bodies back and forth. Look at the communications.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just talk like going back and forth between the Earth and the Moon, like they've got a landline,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, I just was in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, and I couldn't get my Wi-Fi to work.
And that's in 2018, yeah.
And this 2018 when you've got, you know, I mean, this was the same part of the world where Apple's got 20,000 employees with three square miles. And I mean, it's like the server doesn't work, mm-hmm. right? So again, it's implausible. It's completely implausible that they could just have this communication without any disruption. You know, I mean, it goes on flight after flight. They're always talking, Houston, we've got a problem, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's never like not working. The communication just always seems to be okay. This just seems implausible to me. You know, there's just too much weird stuff in space. And this kind of technology was so brand new and had never been tried. We'd never had someone there in the moon talking back to the Earth. You know, the idea that there would be no glitch, it just seems miraculous. And so, you know, again, it just the whole nature of the thing, all of the details, the playing golf, the driving around in the moon rover, the lack of debris from the jet exhaust as the thing comes down and for landing. You know, all of these things can be countered by the people who are trying to defend the intimidation aspect of the moon landing, you know, that they, you know, the government doesn't lie. We have the public's well-meaning heart. You can trust us, right? But in fact, it fits perfectly into the other case that it was just fake, that this is just, that's why there's all these little weird glitches, is because it's hard to pull the thing off.
Yeah, Joe, one thing I learned from watching television is that miracles are possible.
Boy, they surely are when you're in charge of the TV camera. Let the public have the TV camera for a while, and then we'll see how many miracles happen.
As Al Michaels said, 1980, the U.S. beat the Russians. Do you believe in miracles?
Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, we're suggesting that this was a production, a show, a psyop, as most entertainment is. But of course, look, going back in NASA, the history of NASA itself, its first administrator, Thomas Keith Glennon, was the first administrator of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, formally established on October 1st, 1958. He was born in Enderlin, North Carolina on September 8th, 1905. Dr. Glennon earned a degree in electrical engineering from Sheffield Scientific School of Yale University in 1927. I wonder if he's Skull and Bones. Anyway,
yeah.
Following graduation, he became associated with the newly developed sound motion picture industry and later became Assistant General Service Superintendent for Electric Research Products Company. So it's High Tech Movies, a subsidiary of Western Electric Company. During his career, he was a studio manager of Paramount Pictures Incorporated, Samuel Golden Studios, and was briefly on the staff of Vega Airplane Corporation. So we have this fusion of entertainment, aeronautics, aerospace. Of course, we've talked about Laurel Canyon and Lookout Mountain, the Air Force base without a runway, developing film and using Hollywood special effects and many of their movies. A lot of the atomic testing was utilized there. We can perhaps surmise a lot of those are faked. But the use of special effects in these things and propaganda, psychological warfare. So we have that here. So the first guy at NASA emerged out of Hollywood. And I think there was an interesting video of the Russians scientists being asked about the Apollo program. And they were asked, how come the Russians never bothered to put a man on the moon? Because they apparently had the capability. Their space program was as advanced as the U.S. And one of the scientists goes, well, we couldn't figure out how to get a man safely through space, suggesting radiation and these things. And also because of the hostile environment on the moon. But then another Russian scientist goes, oh, because we don't have Hollywood. So... you know, and people, I think we've talked, and other people have researched just how closely linked the motion picture industry, Hollywood, even the media itself in general, is linked in with the national security state, whether it be intelligence or the Pentagon. So these things, you wonder how these things can be coordinated. Well, these relationships are there. They're now formalized in many ways. There's a liaison office between the CIA and Hollywood. The War Department and then the Pentagon virtually took over the motion picture industry at the beginning of World War II and never really quite left. So there's that. I mean, so, you know, there's obviously a relationship here where such things can be produced. And organized. And any program like this would be highly compartmentalized. People don't understand how these agencies function. Very few people at the top know entirely what's going on. There's, the procurement and the development of the various products involved in the NASA space program. Think of like the Manhattan Project, how people, would be developing a thing here, here, and there, there, and they wouldn't know what it was for. And so it's the same thing with this program, would operate the same way.
And particularly since they are developing giant missiles.
Yeah.
Right. There's no question they're developing giant missiles, and there's no question that they're going to put these things into space. The part of the operation that, was fake because they would just take the thing and put it into low Earth orbit. I mean, that how would you as an engineer, were even, with some understanding of what was going on, how would you be able to prove that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, I think you've raised the point in the past, at least I've talking to you, is that what this, obviously other countries would have known, particularly the Soviet Union. So that suggests the Soviet Union sort of played along with this at that meta level. They would play along with, because the whole narrative would support, pretty much all the world's a stage, so to speak, right?
That's the thing, all the world. And then, you get into, like, with the commie, the
Cold War being staged, right. Largely managed, largely staged.
Dialectic so that they can develop the technology for enslavement.
Yeah.
And remember, you have in the Soviet Union, you have the Bolsheviks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get to the space race, perhaps they're not Bolsheviks any longer. They've changed stripes a bit, but are the Bolsheviks still in control? Because the Bolsheviks have nothing but connections into Freemasonry,
mm-hmm.
right? Like Marx, right? As an example, and Lenin, these people. So when you see our skull and bones, Freemasons over here with the fake space race, what do you expect the Chinese and the Russians are going to do if they're on the same page with these guys? And so I think actually the cooperation between the Chinese and the Russians in this whole area is chilling, and it suggests that there is a worldwide cooperation to basically keep a group in control. And so this is one of the reasons why I think they're going to fight like crazy to never permit this information basically to be unchallenged.
Yeah, and I think you've asked the question, why would they do this? I think your point about sort of technocracy, sort of the scientists reigning supreme, how, obviously we're all overawed by this feat, and then we now worship the altar of scientism and the scientists. And, if they can put a man on the moon, they can do anything, So, as I say, I always say, if they can successfully fake the moon landing, why can't they do that? That's how I usually phrase it. But but why, you don't even have to get too esoteric at this stuff. Just look at the politics of the times. Now, it was a very tumultuous time, the 1960s. This is the Vietnam War. You have the anti-war protests peaking in 68, 69, and just the optics of the alleged achievement would have great PR value to the U.S. government, build confidence in the government in these things. So you have that interest. You also have like $26 billion in 1960s dollars were spent on the space program. So really, if they're faking it, they're not going to spend that much money on this stuff. So the question, what did they do with the money? So you have that interest to consider, perhaps money being embezzled. Of course, we now have stories of trillions of dollars missing at the Pentagon and at HUD, hundreds of billions of dollars. And so you have these government agencies, whether it's HUD or the Pentagon or maybe even NASA, being operated as a criminal enterprise. Money's being embezzled, being put in, going where God knows. Some people suggest a secret space program. That's highly speculative in my book, but nevertheless, it's interesting that no one's really there's no oversight of these places because they all have secrecy and national security.
We can't audit the Fed. How in the hell would we know where any of the money that is the U.S. dollar is going, or how much of it is being created? So we have no idea. Look, the secret society uses money as a toy.
Mm-hmm.
It is just an aspect of mind control. That's all it is. I was reading, like, someone was saying, the Rothschild family has like $140 trillion in wealth.
Yeah.
I just had to laugh at this because, you see, if you have 140 trillion of anything, that thing is not worth anything.
Yeah, I know. It's just denominated.
Yeah, because if there's that many of them, then obviously it's just
ludicrous. No, what matters is that they have control of the printing press and make us accept the currency.
And they have the media to give people the cue as to what is valuable.
Yeah.
We believe the dollar is valuable because they tell us that it is. And they have control over the dollar and credit creation. And so when you see something like the moon project and you go, well, gee, where did the $70 billion go? It could easily have just been an account, you know, a ledger entry, which the public is told. And then, you know, the on the other side of it, the money goes wherever they want it to go. But just bear in mind that they can just create money and credit anywhere that they want. There's really, you know, this is the sad thing, but the dollar, when you have a malevolent organization in control of the government and the Fed, you really don't have any value that is permanent inside the currency.
No, yeah.
It's just whatever they feel like doing with it will be done. And they have complete ability to use the power of wealth and money, which is just our mind control belief in the value of these, of, you know, the dollar, for their advantage against us, which is exactly what's happening.
Yeah, it can be either a store of wealth of measurement, or it can be a instrument of wealth extraction and taxation, which it is when you have a debased dollar. It's an, you know, it's obviously inflated, devalued constantly, a debt-based currency, these things where actually the more money it's in circulation, the more debt society is. And that's the long-term plan, because through the magic of compound interest, as Einstein called it, and that's how families like the Rothschilds amassed huge wealth through a sort of this corrupt and occulted banking system. And then, like, you know, like NASA or like intelligence, we can't really peer into it. We're just like, look at the, you know, the pillars of the building and the people going in and out and the official statements and the sort of the strange language that the Federal Reserve chairman speaks and these things. And then we're supposed to, okay, he's a high priest and we're nobody, so we can't question it.
Yeah, he's been to the moon.
Yeah, he's been to the moon and all that. So, but the of course, the larger, I guess the big question is, you know, this is interesting, you know, this is obviously this is very interesting. You know, people were talking about this around a party or get together, and because most people think you're nuts if you bring it up, a certain percentage will be very interested in it and these things. But it has occurred, you know, what, 49 years ago, this July. Is it relevant? Is it still relevant? Well, we get in the issue of, I think the broader issue here is of perception management, psychological warfare, and also media fakery.
Yeah, right? Well, government propaganda against the citizenry.
Yeah.
You know, if this thing is fake, and I, you know, just give you a personal warrant, it's 100% fake, that means that they are using propaganda. The government is organized. There's a secret society that is not disclosing its identity to the public. It has political control, and then it's using, you know, media tricks to give a fake understanding of what's real in the world and of our history to the citizens. Okay, well, that is the problem. That's what's wrong with the moon landing, and the belief that the public has is that the thing the citizens should be doing is going, do it again. We don't buy anything you tell us. Everything has to be subjected to some skepticism and some citizen analysis. We don't care about Popular Mechanics or another oligarch-owned magazine telling us that there's some explanation for why the spacecraft didn't kick up debris, right? I mean, it's possible. How's a citizen going to be able to vet that, right? But to believe in it, we want to have it done again. And this time we're going to pay real close attention, and we're going to have a lot of people who are skeptical looking at the thing and reviewing it as it goes forward. This should be no trouble to do. Think, I mean, you've got like guys like Musk putting a Tesla into outer space, right? Big publicity stunt. You've got the Chinese are threatening, you know, like they want to go to the moon. I mean, everybody, I mean, I think like, even some African countries are talking about having moon programs. Why don't we just all get together and crowdsource the thing and come up with a few hundred million and we can send some an exact replica of the LEM to the space shuttle, and then just kick it off, get it going fast enough, and away it goes.
That's right, because everyone has.
We can do this in the.
Everyone has aluminum foil in their kitchen.
Well, I got aluminum foil. If they run out of that stuff, I'll show up with some, and we can do it ourselves. I even got an old Jeep that we could like put in the thing if they can't come up with the moon rover.
You know, there was a TV show, a short run TV show in the late 70s with Andy Griffith called Salvage One, where a junk dealer builds a spacecraft and goes to the moon and back.
Too close to home, buddy. Too close to home. I mean, they would probably watch that one.
What it does reveal, though, is sort of the utter contempt and maliciousness of the powers that be and the authorities, these government agencies, how they view the people, and that is, I think, a continuing concern, because we have other questionable media events since then. But you also have. The question of you talk about how is this pulled off the media. Well, we've done shows talking about how the media is bought off and controlled by by the secret society, the intelligence agencies. There's I guess maybe people aren't generally familiar with Operation Mockingbird. You know, the control of the major media by this admitted control they exerted, and they continue to exert, I suspect. I think on the media, just how all the media. Major publications were all centrally controlled even back then. You know, with the Time Life Empire, that goes back to Skull and Bones, Henry Luce, and C.D. Jackson, although he was dead by the time of the moon landing, I believe. But anyway, the whole the control of the media by these same entities, and how they would coordinate the news and make sure that no inconvenient questions were asked on the part of the established, respected mainstream media that everyone was watching. And of course, for years, for a decade or so, people have been conditioned to watch the evening news with Walter Cronkite, and that's the way it is. That's the way it is. You know, July 20th, 1969. This is Walter Cronkite signing off. And so that was how they viewed the world. This little box, pixelated reality, which can be manipulated and faked on the whim of those providing that information. So you're presented, again, with a sort of a epistemological problem here about knowledge or understanding how the world works, especially when you're relying on electronic media to feed you information about what's going on in the world, because you have to consider the source.
Well, Tim, I'll tell you, it was a huge problem back in the 60s and 70s, the government control over the media. But think about today with the iPhone. Think of how much more time is spent in venues that have the potential for government control. Mm-hmm. I was this morning, I was driving through the streets of San Francisco, and you could see where the Google and Apple and Facebook employees were waiting on these corners to be picked up by buses, and then they'd be driven, into Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. That's how the residents, the young people typically live in San Francisco, and the Uber companies will pick them up and take them, in these big buses. And I had a chance to observe a collection of them closely, and it was fascinating. No one was talking to each other. All of the employees were sitting there, maybe 2-3 feet space between them, and they're all staring at iPhones.
Yeah, so vaccines aren't the only thing creating autism.
Oh, man.
It's the media,
And then when you think about, so these are people that are actually inside the industry creating the technology, and they are in no way immune from the effect. I mean, this is really a very, very significant change in human behavior. And when you trace back the personal computer into MKUltra, into the people, the same people that created, the acid tests, right, are then going forward and creating a personal computer. Well, this is pretty chilling, isn't it? And then you see these young people just sitting there on the street corner staring at their iPhone. Because if, as I suggest, a malevolent organization is in charge of the information and the various narratives that are coming out of the thing, then basically they're all getting brainwashed. And this is real time right in front of you. They're actually being, programmed and experimented with. So I think that the moon landing is an important thing. I mean, you know, it's kind of a, to some sense, it's sort of a joke because people say, well, who cares? Or, you know, what? Well, what I think is important is that it's something that everyone is aware of, which I think it wouldn't be too hard to get, you know, a kind of a groundswell to demand that they replicate it in order to show that the government isn't malevolent. In other words, I'm just always looking for ways to get the public to be more skeptical about the media and the government. To me, there's plenty of facts out there if people will just have the right mindset that they can realize, you know, exactly what is happening to us and what's being, you know, what they're doing and who the group is and whatnot. But they've got to have the right mindset. So here's a way that you could give them something that might really move them in the right direction, is that the moon landing is fake, it's comical, and it can't be replicated. I mean, if they had the capacity to get through the Van Allen belt, to get out there 250,000 miles, whatever it is, from Earth, and come back in one piece, they'd be doing it.
Yeah, Van Allen himself said in 1959, I think, that it was deadly. And then years later, when he was working with NASA, said it wasn't deadly.
Right.
So I don't know. And then they say you could go through it quickly, but isn't it that tens of thousands of miles? I mean,
it is tens of thousands of miles.
How do you get through tens of thousands of miles quickly?
But also, just think about how preposterous this is.
I mean,
they wouldn't send lab animals through the thing first, just to make sure, yeah, before they sent human beings. You know, I mean, why would they not do that? So, you know, there's just no, you know, real kind of science occurring here. It's just basically, it's lost in space. It's a TV show, and it even has a dramatic conclusion when you have Apollo 13 with the preposterous, the dramatic conclusion where they're coming back through space and they're trapped in the LEM, and they're in the LEM for, I don't know, like a week or something, 6 days, some long time. And this thing has tinfoil walls. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is an absolute fact that I could push my finger through this thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're talking about. So you're talking about a foil that they had to be careful of, because they were afraid that if a sharp object struck it, a hole would go in. Now, this, remember, the astronauts in some of the scenes, like in Apollo 13, don't even have their suits fully on.
No, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Now, wait a second. Back up here. What was the energy to create the, like a 7-degree balmy conditions inside this thing, right?
Well, it did get kind of cold, but not, of course, not 300 degrees.
Well, but that's the thing, zero. Is that... Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's silly. I don't buy it. As far as being able to prove it, the onus isn't on me. I'm sorry. We're in a post-911 world. Onus is on them. Let's see them do it again. I really want to see. I would love to see some of these, the moon hoax debunkers, like from Popular Mechanics, volunteer to get into a LEM and go around and spend like 7 days in deep space. You know, I see the whole thing is just, you know, when you look at it from a certain perspective, it's just, it becomes comedy. And, and that's where I hope the public gets to with it, because that's the right approach to the thing, is that this is it's a TV show that has kind of a comedy where, you know, you don't really get the comedy until you understand the right interpretive framework. But once you have it, it all suddenly makes sense. Just like, he comes off of the, Armstrong comes out of the LEM, and he, that's one small step for a man and one giant leap for mankind. And I mean, this is obvious humor, right?
Yeah.
Giant leap
of faith, right?
Leap of faith. I mean, I think the guys are just rolling on the ground, you know? So that's the thing, is that.
Well, then, because you also have the tragedy on January 27, 1967, the Apollo 1 with Gus Grissom, Chafee, and White. They apparently burned up in the test capsule on the ground. Some people think that there was Grissom was a vocal critic of the program. In fact, he called. In fact, he one time they're trying to communicate from one capsule to another, and the communication didn't work. And he said, how are we supposed to get to the moon and back? We can't even talk to the guy in the next room. And he apparently hung a huge lemon outside one of the capsules to the media. He was a vocal critic of this thing. And his crew burned up. The investigation claimed that there's too much oxygen in the capsule, and it ignited. But there was apparently traces of cyanide found, suggesting maybe they may have been, you know, put out then killed. And I know the son of Grissom, who was the 747 airline pilot, aircraft pilot, claims his father was murdered, and so does the widow. His mother claimed that he was murdered for being a whistleblower about the program. And strange enough, the chief investigator for NASA, who wrote a report on it, died tragically. I think his car was hit by a train or something. And the report.
Well, that's the thing, is you've got to be careful in this business, because people just drop like flies. It's like, you know, becoming a friend of Hillary Clinton is sort of like a career limiting, you know, decision. But, you know, I was going to point out that Tom Wolfe, the Masonic cesspool documentator of the
counterculture. Oh, yeah, the right stuff, yeah.
Yeah, the right stuff. But he also, you know, wrote the electric Kool-Aid acid test, which is just a way to enhance the power of the MK Ultra guys who are pushing out the counterculture. So Wolfe, he had the statement that the astronauts all belong to a brotherhood, but that they didn't talk about it a lot. Right. I mean, you see, again, this is, you know, in one context, perhaps this is just a way of, you know, they're kind of like John Wayne, you know, laconic. They don't talk to, you know, no feelings are expressed. But if you look at it from the right perspective, you can see that this is just a kind of comedy that the oligarchs engage in. It's just like, you know, the moon buggy, where the thing goes over the horizon.
Right? And the right stuff, again, we talk about people's perception of reality, unfortunately, in history is Hollywood. And whether it's World War II, the Holocaust narrative, the space program, all the movies about going to space, all the TV shows, all the TV comedies about going to space, you know, I Dream of Jeannie, these things in the 60s, all the movies about going to space, you know, obviously Apollo 13, of course, The Right Stuff, the movie, which was back in the 80s, was a well-produced movie based on Tom Wolfe's book. But that's people watch The Right Stuff, or they watch Apollo 13, or they watch Schindler's List, and that's reality to them. That's their point of reference to understanding the world, or history at least. And what's interesting, because even in The Right Stuff, if I recall from the movie, it kind of treated Gus Grissom, who's a critic of the program apparently, as sort of a buffoon, because he's the one that loses the capsule and these things. And so it kind of marginalizes Gus Grissom.
Yeah. I mean, see, again, the pattern makes more sense when you look at it through the right lens. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, that's how you know the explanatory power. When the explanatory power is so strong, then you know that the theory is good and may not be true, but it's a good enough theory that the public should just be sitting there just going, I don't believe a thing.
And going further back, the whole thing supposedly started the space race. Remember, this was a product, we alluded to this earlier, the space race was an adjunct of the Cold War. Well, we really, if you go further back into the Cold War, and even World War II, and even through the First World War and the Bolshevik Revolution, we know that the Bolsheviks were funded and financed by Western banks, London, New York, and even Germany. But I mean, but that's a few families, were doing this.
It was just basically, it's the same group of British Masons and Jewish banking elite.
But remember,
that are going to fund Hitler.
It's Sputnik, it's Sputnik, right?
Yeah.
Sputnik. Well, it turns out that the U.S. government wasn't surprised by Sputnik. They surprised the public with Sputnik to create the fears, right? Same way they created the fear with the atom bomb, Russia's getting the bomb. So they create the fear to justify this nationalization of education with science, where science became a big stress. That's when this was coming off the time when the federal government was getting deeper and deeper in the education, getting into the states. Until then, it was a state and local thing. So you have a nationalization of education, further nationalization. The same way the Cold War, World War II was sort of centralizing power, nationalizing the country, destroying the remnants of the old republic in these things, which, you know, which was sort of, although America largely can be called a sort of a Freemasonic creation, its decentralized nature frustrated their agenda. So throughout America's history, there was an attempt to centralized power through crises like this, like the, you know, like the fomented Civil War and these things. Well, the same thing with the First World War and the Second World War. We know this with the Rees Committee hearings, the Carnegie Foundation minutes, how war and crisis was the best way to fundamentally change the country, to fuse it with Russia eventually. These things were all planned out by the great foundations. And through the hundreds and hundreds of these foundations, this is how they control the arts and sciences and perception and entertainment and these things. And there are literally hundreds of foundations that are handled by the Rockefeller-controlled entities, and they're all organized. And of course, an example of that is simply the Council of Foreign Relations, how this stuff is coordinated. But Sputnik creates the fear, and this justifies the space race, the so-called space race. But the space race itself was as stage managed as the Cold War, probably more so because the Cold War.
First of all, I think your point is really good, that this enabled the government to get into education more. It was a great point of fear where the public would simply accept some federal intrusion because, my God, the Sputnik is over our heads. There's that damn Sputnik.
The Russians are going beep, beep, beep over our heads.
It's just, who knows what they're plotting up there. So we better start cranking out some federally funded engineers out of our little grammar school. But I also wanted to say that you're also completely right in linking this back in time to the historical narrative that leads up to it. And when you compare the banking families that are creating, Zionism, they're creating the Nazi Party, but they're also funding the Bolsheviks. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at the end of World War II and World War II just in general, you can see there appears to be orchestration. Right. You have Hitler attacking, all of the Europeans are slaughtering themselves in Russia. But then Hitler withdraws and there's just enough Russians left to kill all of the Germans that are still standing. And Hitler, of course, won't surrender. So this appears to have been orchestration in my mind. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that something like that happens accidentally. And I think they're controlling both sides of the dialectic, both sides of the struggle are being controlled. And that's why there's so much genocide. I don't think you can have the kind of genocide, these sort of numbers, would ever occur between two, you know, political organizations that actually were distinct from one another. So I hate to say it, but I think that the Bolsheviks, Churchill and these guys are all on the same page with the Nazis. And this is all just one big European genocide machine. So now when you go forward in time and then you look at the space race, well, isn't it just another fake conflict? And this time it's one to justify the media control, the control over education, and control, another exact control over finance. I mean, see what I mean? In other words,
I've heard some talks, I think this is research I talked to named John Adams, and I didn't talk to him about this, but he did a show just about how the military, the wars and these things changed our diet. And you could probably make the same argument about the space program itself, about processed foods and how things like deli food, processed meats, are all a product of the military. And it's fundamentally changed the American diet.
That's right. I was drinking Tang and eating processed bologna because the astronauts were drinking this. I was having the breakfast of astronauts when I was a little kid. You know, yeah, you're right. This, I never thought of that, but that's absolutely right. I mean, it's just
preservatives and these things.
An injection, you know?
Yeah. And it you want to do it because the astronauts do it. It's cool.
Yeah. Know? See, yeah. So that's the thing. They create heroes and the government is a hero, right? They bring back the boys from this dramatic problem and the country cheers, we all feel terrific, and we're all basically learning obedience to the government, to the secret society that, you know, it has control over our technology and our media.
Yeah, and Yeah, a while back, I was just talking about this at a family gathering, and I had a relative who's, I guess you could say, skeptical of my skepticism, or I would say just a really credulous normie, I guess you could say, or just a normie. And she kind of exasperated. She goes, I'm just raising some of these questions. She goes, but I saw it happen on television. And I go, well, I feel like saying, well, I saw a T-Rex eat a man off a toilet and it looked better than the moon landing. Does it mean it happened? And I don't even think she understood what I was saying, because, again, it's so far out of her frame of reference and understanding of the world. And that's what some people find so upsetting. This is something that, I mean, it was so big. It's like it was their understanding of thing. It's like, you know, it is. It's like their world is being shattered if this didn't occur.
And so this is to me, this is like the important question is like what is the best portal to try to get the public to wake up to the fact that what they're given as history is in fact propaganda, and that it's being given to them malevolently.
Now, here's another thing: is that if someone were to show me positive proof that they did successfully land on the moon, my world wouldn't be shattered. Okay, fine. They didn't provide. Fine.
Less, yeah.
You know, you didn't show me the evidence. You didn't. Now, okay, fine. Okay, but on the other end, if you do believe in this mission. And it is.
Well, if they had gone 50 years ago, by now it'd be just a bus trip, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the oligarchs would all be lining up. They all want to do this kind of weird stuff with their lives. And so, sure, if it could be done, it would have been repeated over and over again. And with the technology advanced, particularly computer and communications kind of stuff, man, it would just, they'd be happening all the time. The fact that it isn't happening, that even, you know, that is the clearest point of the fact that, no, they didn't go. If they cannot go now, right, then they certainly didn't go 50 years ago with the primitive stuff that they had available technically for this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And kind of looking back, if you really look at the footage that we do have available, it almost looks as ludicrous as that 1912 movie about the moon trip, right?
Yeah, the astronauts hopping around, you know, they're hopping around and it just looks so weird, you know, it just, there's something wrong with the whole thing. It's just, you know, they're singing songs and, you know, playing, you know, pretending to be like on a golf course and stuff like this. This is just not the behavior of people whose lives are in jeopardy every second that they're on this place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's done to give a sense of bravado, kind of like John Wayne, we're fearless. And then the public looks at this and they think, well, this is our government. You know, these astronauts, they're so courageous. They have this sense of humor, but they're, you know, they have these great scientific capacities. Who am I to have an opinion, you know, that the government should be criticized. Yeah, it's the, you know, so that's what happened. No one does, because they just hammer us time after time with this stuff. And so, you know, it's the question that I think you and I should be asking over and over again is like, what is the right portal? What is the way to get more and more people? You know, you talked about a family relative that just, you know, had kind of cognitive dissonance. You know, they couldn't even take a step toward the possibility of such a thing. Well, how do we get people to take that step? What do you think? I mean, what is there something here? Because I think that with 911, you have obviously the clearest possible evidence. But then here with the moon landing, this might be a way that some people have an easier time because
it's not as menacing, I guess you could say.
It's longer ago, and it's, you know, and there is kind of a built up structure of, you know, of criticism of the moon landing being a hoax. There have been so many people that have been coming up with saying, oh, this is wrong and that is wrong, that everyone's kind of aware of it. So maybe it would be something that, you know, a group of people are listening to us who are in college engineers, that they could come up with, here is a real simple way to replicate what they claim they did.
Yeah, and I usually phrase it this way: is what is more technically feasible if they successfully landed, on the moon, than without ever being able to test the stuff in real life situations on the moon in on July 1969, or is it more technically feasible they're able to fake it? I say it's more technically feasible they're able to fake it and control the media and control the narrative. That's more it's much easier to do than actually doing the mission. From a technical standpoint,
we know they can fake it because we saw the film,
and we know that they did have sound stages for such things, and they did build like a 50-foot diameter moon model that they then destroyed. Again, didn't put it in the Smithsonian and these things, which suggests what was this sort of miniaturization height, special effect thing, because this is how they mimic the moon. They destroy it as if they get another artifact. They admitted to destroying. So yeah, it's obviously much more feasible that from a technological standpoint that they fake it than they actually pulled it off in 1969.
And, sure. The public they should have that thought right in the front of their mind. Mm-hmm. And this is something that we can do. And I would just like to have people who have, the technical capacity to come up with just really straightforward ways not to disprove it, what happened, but rather to show they can't do it now. Look, we can easily get to our space station this kind of a vehicle. Now, that vehicle has the same capacities that the LEM had, right? Here it is. We can build it. We get all the specifications. We can get it up there. And then let's just take it to the moon. And this time we'll have everybody watching. There'll be all sorts of ways we can test for everything. And then, look, we will have proven that we can do it. And if they can't do it, if there is just no way that we can actually get to the moon, right, because we don't have the capacity for whatever. And I think that, one of the things is they might actually find a way to get through the Van Allen belt. But you know what I think they probably can't do? It would just be kind of funny. They won't be able to communicate because, and again, this is way over my pay grade in terms of technology, but it just makes a lot of sense to me, particularly after my inability to have a server work yesterday and the Wi-Fi all shut down all across Silicon Valley. It wouldn't surprise me that what really is impossible is not even the physical landing of the moon, it's the ability to talk from there.
Yeah.
Getting through the Van Allen belt in like a real time and just being able to have these little pithy conversations, that may just be completely impossible. And you see, that alone would show that the event in the 60s and 70s, that it didn't happen.
Well, as you said earlier, the American people should say to the NASA space program, Houston, we have a problem with this. Better try.
We just have a problem. We have a problem with the whole thing. So it's I don't think we're going to resolve the moon landing debate, and nor do I want to. What I'm hoping is that it'll just become louder and louder. It's just like 9-1-1. These things are undigestible lumps of narrative that we have inside our mind, but they're undigestible because there's just so many weak parts to them that, the mind just cries out to reanalyze all of the information we're being given. And when that happens, when that, power in our mind is developed and we just want to get more and more verification of what we've been told is truth, it won't take long before a lot of the stuff starts to break down, and it'll never end. And, it's like if you look at our show, Tim, we've been going on a year now of shows. The schematic is getting built out inch by inch, and not just by us, but by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of researchers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so inch by inch, we're building out. We come up with better, more plausible narratives. We have evidence for some things. We only have analysis for others. But the schematic is getting built out. From 9-1-1, the Holocaust, the the Nazi Party going back. I mean, it's all of this stuff, MK Ultra, all of these things are getting steadily built out. And I'm hopeful that at some point the schematic will help, you know, just, you know, that there'll be that tipping point where just too many people will be free to talk about it. Because if you think about what really, what holds the belief that the moon landing occurred to the extent that, you know, people are, you know, they think that if you bring it up, you have some kind of weird conspiracy theory, you know, phobia or something. Mm-hmm. It's the intimidation. It's just the intimidation. You know, your family member who was contesting, do you think that she could make a strong affirmative case for the existence of the thing, of the space landing?
No, it just saw it on television. So
of course. So she doesn't have, so her mind is just held in place by intimidation. That's all that keeps it there, is just this, the normalization of the things that, and by that I mean the socialization of the things that have been shown to us in the pixelated world. Mm-hmm. We saw it on TV. The TV guys who were covering it all claimed it was the truth. The astronaut comes back. He says that it did happen. You know, and so then it becomes real. You know, even though it's certainly possible to fake all of that, you lose that capacity for skepticism. And so, we just have to keep driving home, you know, that look, they have to make a better affirmative case for the existence of this thing. And if they can't, then we have to just add this to the pile of skepticism, you know, like, look, everything you're telling us is fake, and just become more and more skeptical, you know, because it's life and death at this point, you know, all of this stuff, none of this stuff has any sort of theoretical application any longer. I mean, when you look at vaccinations and, you know, and the toxicity in our environment and the toxicity in the universities, in intellectual toxicity, I mean, we are very close to a complete collapse. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to start rallying and fighting back right now. And the first step is, you know, just developing the skepticism against the historical narrative.
Yeah, I mean, little things like Jonas Salk, the father of the polio vaccine, advocating, in effect, genocide, population control through injection. It might make you a little skeptical about the vaccination paradigm in general. You know, so, but he's in a white coat, he's a scientist, and these things, age of science. Science.
Well, I had a conversation, you know, I was in San Francisco, and I had a conversation with someone about vaccination, and you know, I was talking about the need for, you know, better disclosure to parents, mm-hmm. about the dangers, and the better disclosure about the relationships to autism, and the individual said that you know, he said, well, I really believe that there's a lot of genetic, you know, kind of components to autism. And that really, it's a matter of neurological diversity. and I'm not, in other words, he was talking about tolerance and acceptance, you know, and I'm not exaggerating. In fact, this conversation was real. You know, he was taking the point that really the problem is just society looks at the autistic in the wrong way. And this is real, really tragic, right? Because the people then who are creating the Huxley's vision of the brave new world with the epsilons and deltas now even have a cover narrative so that the public is welcoming, right? Welcoming this condition.
Yeah, and if you lamented or point out the problems of this condition and the tragedy of it all, you're now a neuro. What would you call that? Yeah. A neurodiversity phobe or?
Yeah, I had one time. I mean, maybe you came up with a term.
Neologism, a neurophobe or something. Or?
Yeah, we'll have to come up with. That's actually like an important term to get into public immediately. Yeah. You know, yeah. But so that's the thing, is that this is an example of a public that cannot think straight. You know,
the same thing could be argued about things like the spread of homosexuality and sexual dysfunction and sexual this is ultimately these are epiphenomenal of a society that is just being debased and degraded because you increase the amount of not just toxins but also just the toxic culture itself and the trauma that people face, the psychological trauma. There was a time in a saner age when this was considered a condition, a problem, a psychological disorder,
an illness.
And now, again, if you point out what be it the moral, the practical problems with such a lifestyle, you're now a homophobe or a transphobe. And these people, if everyone lived everyone lived like that, society would crumble because you wouldn't have repopulation.
Well, the problem is that this is exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't just a theoretical. Again, it's not theoretical. We're not in a theoretical, analytic zone where we're just kind of chatting about these things. I mean, these things are happening real time. And, and it kind of goes back to that show we did about Martin Luther King, where we're making the case that maybe we should look at this as an attempt to establish a religion, right, based on integration, because this then was added on to, if you look at how King creates, he's the new Moses, he foresees his death, and, and the religion is integration. It's not financial or educational advancement, which are technical and productive things. It's integration somehow becomes the central, benefit that everything has to be, focused on, and we have to move toward. And then if you're opposed to that, to integration, then you're a bigot. And then the bigotry spreads out from there.
Yeah.
With the power of religion. And it becomes, there's feminism. You can't be a bigot here. And then, of course, then it gets into the gay community. They take on exactly the same aspect, that it's bigotry versus a religion.
Because if you point out the problems of feminism, then you say, well, what about breastfeeding? Then you say, you're a sexist. Yeah, but how are babies? Then they say, well, we're not going to have babies anymore. Well, there you go. Then if you point out, what about procreation and the fact that homosexuality is by definition sterile? No, what are you, a homophobe? And these things, but these things these are demonstrably destructive forms of behavior. And again, what you point about Martin Luther King is very interesting because it's almost like I've heard a term, it's called the sacred narrative that's brought about through a sacred act of violence. And of course, the assassination, you need the martyr, you need the bloodletting, and then he's martyred. And then the sacred narrative, and that narrative or that idea, the civil rights model, is used and fans out on all these other causes. And again, if you want to maintain any sense of community, cohesiveness, moral stability, well, those communities tend to be not diverse. So diversity breaks society down. This goes, and they're aware of this. This is what the Caligari plan in the 20s. Mongrelizing European culture to make it weak and divided so the oligarchs can rule over it,
Well, and genocide it.
Yeah. And it's one of these things where it's everywhere. Cause I saw some sort of public service announcement with building community, and they show it within this community. You have a black guy, an Asian guy, a white guy, a woman of some ethnic background, a Hindu apparently. And they're like working, cleaning a park together. Now, only in that PSA does that exist.
Well, it can exist. It's like mechanically impossible.
It's not
because
going
those if those cultures were distinct enough to produce an identifiable being, then they would not be basically so melted down and blurred as to be, in coordination with all the others.
Any connection that group's going to have to one another is going to be superficial and polite, but they're not going to identify with another, organize, and pose any threat to the oligarchs, which is the idea. That's the sophistication of their thinking. That shows, because this stuff has been applied scientifically. They study humanity scientifically. They establish universities and whole disciplines like sociology and psychology, and it's weaponized from the get-go. That's what our earlier talk about this stuff. All this is weaponized. And it's not done for our benefit. It's not done, it's done to manipulate and control.
To mind control us so that we don't complain as the technologic slave state is being developed. And then we accept our basically evaporation from the planet as neurologic diversity.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we're not bigots, so we're fine with being genocided.
Mm-hmm. So, well, it's been a long trip. It's Like going to the moon and back, cover a lot of ground. So
yeah, it has. It has, right. we'll have to, see how much ground we can cover in the next week. I'm sorry I wasn't available to get the show done at the normal time. It won't happen again. I'm not going to go back to such a primitive area as Silicon Valley, where the servers don't work and there's no way you can get anything to be repaired. You know, it's just impossible. So, but it's good to be back and good to talk. We'll talk next week. Okay, Tim?
Good deal. Well, we'll talk. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you.